and move to the fourth case, Johnson v. GDF, 11-1934. Mr. Rosiello.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a case of first impression in this circuit, and probably will or should be the first appellate decision printed, published appellate decision, on the application of the Supreme Court of the United States decision in Venegas versus Mitchell to awards of attorney's fees arising under the Fair Labor Standards Act. It involves the duty of the district court to scrutinize settlements and judgments for fairness and the reasonableness of attorney's fees where the contingent fee contract the plaintiff has with his attorney would reduce his recovery and prevent him from receiving his full compensation as awarded by the jury or by settlement. While the usual standard of review for attorney's fee awards is the abuse of discretion standard, this court has held in Anderson versus AB Painting that where there has been an error in a legal analysis, the standard is de novo. Now, Venegas versus Mitchell was decided in 1990 in a 1988 case, and that holds that the plaintiff, in the exercise of his right to bargain for competent counsel, may agree to pay his lawyer a contingent fee in addition to the statutory fee shifting from the defendant. Since Venegas has been decided, a few lower courts have held that it does not apply to FLSA cases where the contingent fee would diminish the employee's compensation recovery.
The same issue present in a case you're arguing next week.
Yes, I am, right.
Of a different panel.
Right. Yeah, right. I was hoping if we get the same panel, but right, Pickett's got the same issue.
Maybe a different panel, I don't know. But it's argued next week.
It's argued next Thursday, right. Now, I'm asking this court to follow the recent precedent from the Florida District Courts, which is cited in my reply brief. As explained in there's a couple of cases. There's Zegers, Z-E-G-E-R-S, and Jackson versus Pete's painting cases, which hold that the contingent fee is irrelevant and that the employer, the losing employer, pays the entire fee and the winning plaintiff pays no fee and pays no court costs. The FLSA does not have prevailing party language like Title VII does. The 216B says that the court shall, in addition to any judgment awarded to the plaintiff or plaintiffs, allow a reasonable attorney's fee to be paid by the defendant and costs of the action. Now, if you go back to 1944, Brooklyn Savings Bank versus O'Neill traces the legislative history of the Act. By the way, as you all know, the Act is the minimum wage law and the overtime pay law. So it's the FLSA was enacted to protect the most vulnerable. And the Supreme Court in 1944 in Brooklyn Savings Bank says that it was the intent that the plaintiff pay no fee, that if he wins the case, it's an all-or-nothing situation. He gets his full compensation due. In this case, this plaintiff got $10,000. Now, the judge, the district judge, virtually denied all fees, awarded $1,500 for 183 hours of time in the case after I won the case on the merits. The litigation had been pending for 2.5-3 years. We had a full jury trial on the merits, conference on jury instructions, final pretrial order, final pretrial conference, post-trial motions, a previous appeal to this court. We went to mediation. I got another $5,000 in liquidated damages at mediation, and the fees were denied.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You said the plaintiff recovered $10,000.
Right.
Isn't one of the points you raised that he, actually the plaintiff, Mr. Johnson, recovered nothing?
Well, actually, tentatively, he's recovered nothing. I'm asking this court to give him the $10,000. That's the whole purpose of this appeal, to give him the full $10,000 and that the district, the case either be remanded or this court assess the attorney's fee, and that the reasonable fee should be calculated irrespective of the contingent fee agreement with the client. If you look at the United Slate case, that's the leading appellate court decision from the Sixth Circuit on this point. And then there are three or four cases that have come out in the last two, 3 years or so from Florida that say that Venegas versus Mitchell does not apply in the context of an FLSA case, that the plaintiff gets the full recovery. Now, the in this case...
But your fee agreement didn't provide for that, did it? It didn't honor that principle.
It didn't, because there was no case law at the time. When I entered into the fee agreement in June of 05, the plaintiff was still employed. He's a pizza maker at a Domino's Pizza, and he filed suit in state court for overtime wages, which he won. As soon as they got the summons in that case, his hours were reduced by half right away, and then about 2 months later he was fired on reasons that he quit rather than was fired. The jury disbelieved the defendant's version. Now, the fee agreement called for a third plus $8,500. Obviously, there's not enough in $10,000 to give him anything. So I was, you know, between a rock and a hard place. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any case law to follow one way or the other. Since this appeal has come up, I've researched the issue further, and I found the United Slate case, and I found those three cases in Florida, which are cited in the reply brief, Zegers, Jackson, and there's another one, I forget the name. Well, you want to look at the cases of Zegers, United Slate, Madrix versus Dyes, Jackson versus Pete's Painting, and Schulte versus Ganji, as well as Brooklyn Savings Bank versus O'Neill. The last two are Supreme Court cases. Each of those cases holds that the plaintiff pays no fee, that the contingent fee agreement is totally irrelevant, and the plaintiff shouldn't even have to pay a contingent fee, that the employer pays the whole fee if he wins. I had asked the district court for a hearing twice. Apparently, I was in a conflict of interest with my client somehow. The contingent fee agreement provided that he would get nothing out of it. So I asked for a hearing twice, maybe three times even, at least twice. And I explained this to the district court. And in my papers, I said that all or part of the contingent fee should be shifted to the defendant, so the plaintiff would obtain an economic recovery. The judge never set a hearing on the issue. Instead, what he did, after all that litigation, after the appeal to this court, settling at mediation for the liquidated damages plus interest and costs, the district judge referred it to a magistrate. The magistrate had no familiarity with the case. He looked at it. First thing he says, I know nothing about this case. And then he asked me, well, when was the first time you realized the plaintiff wasn't getting anything? I said, well, when the verdict was returned in open court. I mean, there's no way I was going to know 5 years earlier when I signed the contingent fee agreement that the verdict would be $5,000.
Well, one of the points that you make in your papers is that you didn't learn of the small level of the wage differential claim until just before trial.
Right.
Right? But you're suing today, you're pursuing this appeal in Mr. Johnson's name. He certainly knew, right?
Yes, he did, right.
Okay.
Well, actually, what was your question again?
Well, here's my question. You've brought this claim in his name.
But Johnson, I'm here to get $10,000 for Johnson. That's what I'm here for.
Okay. So that's the relief you're requesting from the court?
Yes. Then
you don't want the $180,000.
Well, I want that on top, yes. Right. No.
I'm interested in that.
Well, I mean, the statute is pretty clear.
Well, here's my point. So, yes, you want
the
10.
I want to give Johnson something. I mean,
GDF's going to say, we already paid him the 10.
What's that?
GDF is going to say, we've already paid the 10. We paid our jury verdict plus more after we mediated. So that payment has been made.
Right.
Okay. So, but you're suing today in his name.
Right.
I'm struggling with that a little bit, because it seems to me that the only one who stands to benefit, that you might be the real party in interest in this appeal.
Well, I have an assignment of rights to the statutory fee.
Okay.
All right.
So let's get to that. So then you stand in his shoes, right?
Right.
And he knew that he got that job 3 weeks later and that it paid more.
And so did the defendant, yes.
Well, I know that's your contention. So you're saying the defendant knew he knew, but you told the court, I didn't know until days before trial.
What happened was, I actually really had forgotten. This case had been set for trial 3 times, mm-hmm. and his deposition had been taken like 2.5 years earlier, and it was just before trial preparation. I was going through the damages with him, and he said, well, I found another job right away, and I'd forgotten that he got the job driving the cab.
But weren't you asked in discovery about mitigation?
Yes, we were, and I answered all the discovery, right. It's in there. It's also in the record that they took his deposition. The defendant subpoenaed Red...
By the way, you're well into your rebuttal.
All right, well, I'll stop right here. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Fine. Mr. Rothschild?
May it please the court, Donald Rothschild for GDF, Inc. The request of Mr. Rossiello to shift the contingency fee at this point in the game is not only outside of the purview of this court, it's an absurd request. It's a request being made after Mr. Rossiello appropriated all of the money for himself, and only after he couldn't get the fee that he wanted from the district court, he wants to try to make a deal with this court in the name of claiming that the whole purpose of this appeal is to give Mr. Johnson $10,000. As Your Honor pointed out, Mr. Rossiello is the real party in interest here, and what he's attempting to do is try to get $112,000 and give back the $10,000 in hindsight. And even though he's highly critical of the district court for applying hindsight in determining a proper fee, he is actually, in hindsight, after not getting the fee that he was seeking, attempting to manipulate this process and seek relief that is way outside of the purview of the court. For example, he's asking for a pronouncement that any time a hearing is requested in a pursuit of fees, it should be granted. The case law is clear that there is no right to an evidentiary hearing on attorney's fees petitions. In fact, courts have held that it's really not productive litigation that the courts should be spending a lot of time in. And this is Mr. Rossiello's fee petition in the district court, a medium-sized phone book. He was able to argue anything he wanted to argue. He submitted affidavits. He submitted fee contracts. He submitted case law. He submitted everything that his heart desired, and both the magistrate judge and the district judge carefully reviewed all of that and addressed all of that in their ruling.
Well, I'm a little troubled by this, though, in terms of the careful consideration. Mr. Johnson wins at trial. Nowhere along the line does GDF concede that Mr. Johnson has a valid claim. There's no offer that I can tell. There's an offer, I guess, in the state court proceeding at some point to settle both things, but GDF denies that he was fired. They put on a defense to the jury and so forth. How is that worth only 4 hours?
Well, I think it's clear that from the record that GDF made a settlement offer of $25,000 when this case was pending, and that was rejected. And then we were asking questions.
Settlement for the state court proceeding?
It was for both cases.
Retaliation claim.
It was for both cases. And Mr. Rossiello produced this simulation and refers to it in his answers to discovery in the district court case documents 51 through 54, showing a $30,000 loss. So we were presented with a $75,000 original demand, then a $10,000 plus $10,000 damage award, but also referring to a $30,000 loss. Then we get towards the trial, it becomes $13,500 plus $13,500. Had we known that the damages were only $1,000, and this is what both the magistrate judge and the district judge say very, very clearly.
Your client knew of the reemployment at some point early on from the state court proceeding.
Well,
I don't know whether your firm was involved at that
time. Yes, we were, but what actually happened was the reemployment occurred when this class action matter, the petition to certify a class, was pending. Mr. Johnson's deposition was taken in April of 06. This case was not pending. This case was not filed until July of 07. So we were not looking or concerned.
That information doesn't go away. You know he's no longer a pizza maker. And you know from the state court discovery that he's employed somewhere else.
Well,
and there's never an offer of judgment there after that initial $25,000 or $27,000 offer. There's no serious discovery either way, or our serious settlement negotiations either way.
Well, we did make an earnest effort to try to settle the case. We did try to find out what he was looking for. Mr. Ross, during the heart of the discovery on the case, Mr. Rossiello, from February to June, I believe, of 08, when the discovery was open, was suspended from the practice of law. So the discovery that we had, where he said that he didn't have any tax returns and had $10,000 plus $10,000 in damages plus this $30,000 figure, we believed that he was seeking a substantial amount of money. And I think the court is clear, the district court and the magistrate were very clear about the fact that he had an obligation, particularly in light of this court's ruling in the Spigon case and a district court opinion in the Curtin case, to disclose it.
This is a whole different situation where there was an offer. It wasn't an offer settled or offered of judgment in that case.
It was an offer of judgment.
So there was no point in pursuing it further. Here, you guys contend all the way through that he's not fired at all. He resigned or walked away.
The point is, we had no idea that the damages being sought, and Mr. Rossiello.
So you've got a fight over damages, but a dispute over that, some uncertainty there. But you're continuing to fight liability all the way down the line, all the way through jury verdict.
We fought it, but
the post jury motion as well.
I think that is correct, Your Honor.
It's vegan.
Well, it's there is that distinction, admittedly.
So it's got to be worth more than 4 hours, doesn't it?
I think the district court held that it's not that he didn't do the work. It's the fact that the work was unnecessary. They weren't reasonably expended hours. That's what the magistrate held, and that's what the district court held, that those hours were not reasonably expended because...
The difficulty I have with that is that if your client persists all the way through contending that this is not a retaliatory termination, not a termination at all, something more than 4 hours had to be expended to get to a result.
Well, again, had we known that $1,000, which we were surprised to learn on the day of trial, was the only amount that he was going to ask the jury for...
Then you would have conceded that it was a termination, retaliatory termination.
That it didn't... Well, I don't think you have to concede anything on a settlement. I mean, we would have certainly paid that money had we known that up front, that it was a $1,000 claim.
At some point, you mentioned in your papers that once the amount of the overtime claim was liquidated in the state court proceeding, that a settlement or an offer of judgment, one or the other, was quickly achieved.
Very quickly in the courtroom at the time it was disclosed.
Okay. So less than 4 hours. It took less than 4 hours. Is that what you're saying?
It took less than 4 minutes once we learned that it was $4,300 instead of $30,000 plus. We immediately said we consent. An order was entered in the courtroom that day an agreed judgment for $4,300, and the case then went to the court to determine the reasonable fees. Had we known similarly about the $1,000, we would have agreed to pay the $1,000. But it was all these other things, reduced hours, loss of a position. We didn't know any of that until the day that Mr. Rossiello delivered his opening statement and stated that he is only seeking 3 weeks of wages or $1,000. And had we known that, we had no business or desire to try to just fight for the sake of fighting. It was a financial decision when he was making these excessive claims of what his client was entitled to.
That doesn't quite explain your post verdict motion, still resisting liability.
I don't think Mr. Rossiello was going to take $1,000 at that point.
He had a jury verdict that included punitive damages.
Well, or $5,000 at that point. I mean, the issue of the pre-filing or at the time of filing offers, really at the time we made our post-trial efforts to overturn the verdict, were really not at play, to be quite frank, Your Honor. So I don't think there was any abuse of discretion. There's a highly deferential standard that applies here. All of the arguments were made. All the facts were on the table. Yes, Your Honor. And I thank your court.
Thank you. How much time remaining? No time. Rossiello or Rossiello?
Rossiello.
Mr. Rossiello, apologize for the mispronunciation. I'll give you one more minute.
First, answer Judge Magnus's question. First of all, if I have an assignment of rights, I can't sue in the name of the client. I think it's Rule 17 or 18 or 19. It's right in there. Also, when I have a statutory right, I can also sue in the real part. So Mr. Johnson has a vested interest in here. First of all, they never complained about the fact that, well, only $1,000 was involved, and we would have settled until after they lost the case. So that never came up. Secondly, every single reason given by the district court below for denying the fee is not supported by the record. First of all, only $1,000 in back wages was not involved. The FLSA provides for relief without limitation. Back pay, front pay, liquidated damage, attorney's fees and costs. And we got virtually everything. Secondly, his reason why we never gave the defendant any, open quote, real opportunity to settle the case, not supported by the record. The judge signed right on the final pretrial order the same page that the parties had considered settlement. Also, we...
Your minute.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Very good. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this under advisement. And